before I had that uncontrollable attack. I was talking about a group of 30 scientists, economists, and fishery specialists who've come together to make a plan for rebuilding fishing stocks and restoring fishing communities. And with me now, for the next part of Underreported, is David Festa, F-E-S-T-A, Director of the Oceans Program at Environmental Defense. I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show, and thank you so much for being patient. Were you part of the team that developed the plan, David?
Yes, I was. I and Barry Gold at the Gordon and Betty Moore Foundation were the two people that were the architects of this study.
So does this mean that experts actually believe it's a real possibility that the seas could be extinct by 2048?
Oh, absolutely, yes. The threats of pollution and climate change and overfishing, which is taking too many fish out of the sea, are really putting us on a trajectory that does not look good at all.
So what would it mean for the sea to be extinct? No fish or just not enough to feed any humans?
Well, for all effective purposes, not enough fish to feed any of the animals that need them to live, including ourselves. So no whales, no dolphins. No beautiful coral fish or no seafood for us.
Well, for many years, I remember I was encouraged to eat more fish.
Yes.
Now
yes.
I'm being told that I'm going to destroy the oceans if I do it.
Well, we think you can have your fish and oceans too. The problem is, while threats like pollution and climate change are real and long-term, the immediate threat and something that we can actually do something about is this practice of overfishing, taking fish out of the sea faster than they can reproduce.
So it's the fish that we eat that are most endangered. There are other fish that we don't eat, aren't there?
Well, actually, they're all endangered, unfortunately. There are fish that we don't eat, but we still take out of the sea. We take them out to feed to other fish. If you have had salmon, it's probably a farmed salmon, and salmon eat other fish. So we have to go fishing to feed our fish and our farmed fish, but also fish are in cat food, dog food, animal feeds. They're in industrial products. So we take a lot of fish out of the ocean that we don't necessarily eat.
There are also real problems for the people who fish, aren't there? I've seen a documentary about fishermen in Massachusetts, some who agreed to go along with a plan that would not mean as much fish for them, although they made a major economic sacrifice. In another town, they didn't agree to go along with the plan, and they're doing better. And now the first group is very upset.
Well, here's the problem that we've identified with how we're trying to regulate fishing. We're actually regulating the wrong thing. What we're regulating right now is how fishermen fish, in hopes that we can keep them from catching too many fish. What we should be telling them is how many fish they can take out of the ocean, and then giving them shares of that, what we call total allowable catch, and letting them trade and manage that share in a way that makes sense for them. But we know at the end, only that number of fish is coming out of the ocean.
This is the LAPS program?
Correct.
Limited Access Privilege Program. I'm not exactly sure I understand. So they would, let's say they take a million fish out, dump back 200,000, and then get paid for that?
Well, it helps to know a little bit about how regulation is done in the first place. And regulation, the way we regulate, is that we don't actually tell fishermen directly how many fish they can catch. What we do is decide how many fish we'd like them to catch, and then give them instructions on how to fish in hopes that they don't catch more than that number.
You mean certain kinds of nets rather than others?
Certain kind of nets, a certain amount of time, certain days that you can go fishing and days you can't go fishing, certain types of how much fish you can have on your boat. And the whole idea is to control the effort of fishing so that effort doesn't bring in more fish.
And then we give them funds to make up for the difference?
Well, sometimes we give them funds to make up for the difference, but the problem with effort, this way we do it now, is it doesn't really control the number of fish. Let me give you an example. I'm from Washington, D.C. Let's say that the Highway Safety Board doesn't want me to drive faster than 65 miles an hour to get up here. Instead of posting a speed limit, what they do is say, well, you have to drive with your tires flat, and that should slow you down to 65 miles an hour. So I obey the law. I say, fine, I'm going to take the air out of my tires, and I'm only going to drive But then what I do is I go find somebody who will sell me really hard rims so I can drive 65 miles an hour again. And this is what goes on in fishing. The fishing regulators say, well, I bet you this guy can only catch 10 fish every day, and if I only want him to catch 20 fish, then I'm going to say you can only fish 2 days a week. But what the fishermen will do, go, okay, if you only want me to fish 2 days a week, I'm going to get a bigger boat, and I'm going to catch 40 fish in those 2 days. So the system that we looked at in our report is to say, let's get rid of all those crazy regulations about how you fish. Let's instead say the scientists have decided that there is a fixed number of fish that can be caught this year, and we're going to give away shares of that total allowable catch to individual fishermen or to communities or to fishing cooperatives. And all we care about is whether when they land the fish, they have enough shares to cover the fish. They can fish anytime they want using the gear they want. There are some restrictions on the types of gear, but what that gives the fishermen the incentive to do is really innovate. And I can give you an example of how that affects how many fish are in the ocean. In the old system, there's a fish called sablefish. Some people know it as black cod. It's quite delicious. It comes from Canada. They used to fish that with this limit on how many days you could fish. So there was a premium on how many fish could you catch in a very short period of time. And the fishermen would go out and put a lot of hooks in the water and drag them back up. And sometimes they had sablefish and sometimes they didn't. They didn't really care. And then they'd bring it all to shore. And lo and behold, of course, they had more fish than the regulators wanted them to. They had to shorten the season. Plus, they had a lot of dead fish that they couldn't sell, and they throw overboard, dying or dead. Under the new system, they say, fine, all you have, we just want to make sure that you only catch this number of fish. You can fish pretty much all year round. So they're not fishing against the clock. And if you're a fisherman, every time you buy a piece of bait, you put it on the hook. By the hook, of course, you've got to put that in the water. Pull it up. Every time it doesn't have a sablefish on it, that's a wasted expense for you. So they all of a sudden become very good at figuring out how to get the bait right, the hooks right, and everything else. Right now, the fishermen are using 53 million fewer hooks to catch roughly the same amount of fish as they did before. So that's why this is a better system. It unleashes the innovation and creates a system that keeps fishermen within their limit without penalizing them.
And without a loss of income?
And without a loss of income. In fact, because they can spread the season out over the course of the year, the fish actually becomes more valuable. You've probably had a halibut dinner sometime in the recent past, but if you think back 15 years ago, halibut was not something that you saw on white tablecloth menus because it was caught in this way where the season was only 48 hours long. So all a year's worth of halibut landed on the dock, then got frozen and turned into frozen blocks of protein. It wasn't a gourmet meal. Under the new system, where they specify shares, the season is spread out over the year. We now can enjoy fresh fish. The fishermen are safer. They make more money. The ocean's better off. Everybody wins.
And we're healthier because we're eating fresh fish.
Absolutely.
What about the fishermen who are already trying not to overfish and are doing a good job of managing their fishing stocks? Will this program make a difference for them?
Absolutely, because it will also allow them to extend their seasons, to experiment with better gear, to figure out how to be more precise with their fishing and be rewarded financially for it. Right now, they don't get rewarded financially for that. They get a pat on the back. That's it.
Now, the film that I talked about earlier, the fishermen were very annoyed that experts, so-called experts, they said, people who really did not fish for a living, were telling them how to fish. And how do you answer that? They say, we've been doing this. This has been our family tradition for six generations, and now you're coming in and telling us what to do.
Well, that's another thing that we found in our study. Under this system, you don't actually have to tell them how to fish. You work with them and the scientists to say, what is the safe level of fish? How many fish can be taken out of the ocean so that we're leaving enough to have more fish later? And then you leave the business of fishing to them. And we find in the Gulf of Mexico, for example, when this system went in, a new one just went in January, the fishermen themselves told the regulators, we need you to make the amount of fish we can catch smaller because we're not certain that what the scientists said is actually a safe enough level. And we know that we have a stake in the fishery now. We own a share of the fishery, and we want it to be better managed.
I understand that until 5 years ago, Congress had imposed a moratorium on catch shares. Why? What was the, what's the downside there?
Well, there's two. There's several elements that make it controversial. One is that you are going to divide up this fish or the catch into different shares. So there's a big discussion about, okay, who gets the initial allocation of the shares? And that can be a very complicated debate. We hope we've simplified the debate with our report by providing a list of different ways that people can do that.
When do you expect to see the most opposition from the industrial fishing operations?
Probably the most opposition will come from and has come from the people who currently depend on or have built businesses around this kind of pulse fishing where a lot of fish arrives in the dock. So, for example, you have some shoreside processors who have built plants that can handle large volumes of fish all at once. Well, you don't need those plants when you're landing fish throughout the year in a more reasonable, ordered fashion. So those people certainly have an economic stake in the current system, and they will need to be part of the discussions going forward, and they'll need to feel like they get something out of it too.
Well, I sure hope it works, because I would hate to think that the oceans could be extinct of all, I guess, all life or all fish.
Well, I believe the study says something to the effect of commercially extinct, meaning that there will be a few running around, but not enough to actually make a living off of if you're an animal or people that eat fish.
And that would be within the lifetimes of many of my listeners, 2048.
Oh, absolutely. But we've seen fisheries recover that have gone to these kinds of catch share systems. And that is our message. That's why we're very hopeful.
David Fester is director of the Oceans Program at Environmental Defense, and he was one of a group of 30 scientists, economists, and fisheries specialists who came together to come up with a new plan for rebuilding fishing stocks and restoring fishing communities. Thank you so much for being with us today.
It was a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.